Hello, this is Anvati. Welcome to the news with NDTV. It's Tuesday, May 20th, and coming up in today's episode, Abhishek Banerjee joins India's global anti-terror delegation amid Trinamool row. Tamil Nadu student alleges torture harassment by DMK-linked husband. As COVID-19 cases surge across Southeast Asia, authorities urge booster shots. And Chief Justice of India cautions against broad interference during Waqf Amendment Act hearing. Trinamool Congress MP Abhishek Banerjee is set to represent India in the parliamentary outreach program aimed at highlighting the country's stance against terrorism. However, there's a catch. The move comes amid controversy over the central government selecting party representatives from Trinamool for the program, allegedly without wider political consultation. Sources confirm that Banerjee, who is also the nephew of West Bengal Chief Minister and Trinamool Supremo Mamata Banerjee, will now be a part of the 7 delegations visiting various countries in the aftermath of Operation Sindoor. These outreach teams are being sent as a part of India's diplomatic response following the Pahalgam terror attack and subsequent Operation Sindoor. Banerjee is expected to replace fellow Trinamool MP and former cricketer Yusuf Pathan in the group, headed by Janata Dal United leader Sanjay Kumar Jha. The Trinamool Congress had raised objections earlier, saying the centre had not consulted its leadership before naming a party MP for the global initiative. Sources have also revealed that Union Minister Kiran Rijiju reached out directly to Chief Minister Mamata Banerjee in an effort to resolve the matter. During their conversation, Ms. Banerjee reportedly suggested her nephew's name for the delegation and expressed her disappointment over the lack of prior consultation. The delegation led by Mr. Jha will also include BJP MPs Aparajita Sarangi and Brijlal from CPIM, MP John Brittas, Independent MP Prashant Barua, and Himang Joshi from the BJP. The group is scheduled to depart on 22nd of May and visit Indonesia, Malaysia, South Korea, Japan, and Singapore. Ahead of the visit, Foreign Secretary Vikram Misri is set to brief the members later today. Meanwhile, NCP Sharad Pawar faction leader Sharad Pawar addressed media in Baramati yesterday and indirectly criticised Shiv Sena UBT MP Sanjay Raut, who had suggested that India Bloc Party should boycott the centre's global outreach plan. Mr. Pawar said when international issues come up, party-level politics should be avoided. He added that he had once been a part of a similar delegation to the United Nations, led by Atal Bihari Vajpayee during P.V. Narasimha Rao's tenure as Prime Minister. Quote, "The government has formed these delegations to represent India's position on the Pahalgam attack and related developments. This is not the place for local politics," unquote, Mr. Pawar said. Mr. Raut, however, maintains that the delegations will end up defending what he termed as the sins and the crimes of the government. The Supreme Court today heard multiple petitions challenging the recently passed Waqf Amendment Act, with the CJI emphasizing that laws passed by Parliament carry a presumption of constitutionality and courts should only intervene if there is a glaring case that has been presented. Chief Justice B.R. Gawai shared the bench with Justice A.J. Massey and made these remarks during a clutch of petitions challenging the Waqf Amendment Act 2025. The Waqf Amendment Act was enacted just last month and has drawn criticism from various quarters. Earlier, the court had focused on three aspects of specific concerns. First, the recognition of Waqf by user or long-standing committee use. Second, nomination of non-Muslims to Waqf boards and Central Waqf Council. And third, identification of government land as Waqf property. The centre had previously assured the court that it would address these issues until the legal challenge is resolved. When the hearing resumed, Solicitor General Tushar Mehta told the bench that centre had submitted its response. However, he raised concerns that the petitioner's arguments had expanded beyond the agreed 3 points. He said, and I quote, "My request is to confine the discussion to these issues only," unquote. Senior advocates Kapil Sibal and Abhishek Manu Singhvi, representing the petitioners, disagreed. Quote, "We cannot conduct a piecemeal hearing," Mr. Singhvi said. Mr. Sibal added that the act allows the government to take over Waqf property without due process. Quote, "The law is crafted in a way that Waqf land can be taken away. Even a private person or a panchayat can raise an objection and the property may no longer be considered a Waqf property," unquote. Mr. Sibal also questioned the provision that only practicing Muslims of 5 years can create a Waqf. Quote, "If I am on my deathbed and wish to donate my property, I have to prove my faith first. That is unconstitutional," he argued. He further noted the economic contrast between religious institutions in Waqf by user clauses. Quote, "There is no chadhava in mosque like there are in temples. People often leave their property for Waqf because the state doesn't finance mosques or graveyards," he said. When the Chief Justice mentioned grants at Dargah, Mr. Sibal responded, "I'm speaking of mosques, not dargahs." The matter will continue to be heard in the coming weeks. But after a short break, when the court met again, Mr. Sibal argued that as soon as a monument is declared protected by Archaeological Survey of India, it would also then lose its Waqf status. This includes Jama Masjid and Sambhal, he said. "So any dispute is raised and the Waqf status is gone. This is very disturbing," he said. A 20-year-old college student from Arakkonam, Tamil Nadu, has accused her husband of torture and sexual harassment. The husband, identified as Devasial, is reportedly associated with the ruling DMK party and claims to be the deputy secretary of its youth wing. The woman alleges Devasial threatened to harm her family if she reported him. In an appeal which has been highlighted by the main opposition party, the AIADMK, she stated, and I quote, "He assaulted me on the way to college, injured me and broke my phone." She further claimed, quote, "He would say, if you complain, nothing will happen as the police will support me." The woman also mentioned, "Because of him, I tried to take poison." Further details from her appeal include claims that his job is to torture 20-year-old girls to sleep with politicians. No action is ever taken against him. And I'm quoting from the statement. "When I complain, he threatens to cut me to pieces. He tortured me in a car and told me to sleep with the man he pointed to. And I can't leave my home. I couldn't take my exams." The woman also publicly appealed to DMK leader and Chief Minister M.K. Stalin, stating, "Otherwise, I will kill myself." These allegations have led to a political row, with the AIADMK accusing DMK of protecting Devasail. AIADMK boss Edappi K. Palaniswamy stated on X that police initially refused to register a complaint until local AIADMK MLA S. Ravi intervened. Once the complaint was filed, the woman also reportedly cited connections between her husband and Tamil Nadu School Education Minister Anbil Mayas Poyamohi. Police have indicated that a preliminary inquiry suggests no evidence of sexual assault at that time. The young woman's complaint reportedly stated she was introduced to several men by her husband and presumed she would be sent to them for sexual acts. The DMK has stated that police will act against any guilty parties and that the party will take internal action based on police investigation. AIADMK leader Palaniswamy has drawn comparison between this case and the 2019 Polachi sex abuse case, where multiple women were raped and blackmailed. He urged Chief Minister Stalin to address the current situation, highlighting the Polachi case, in which a gang of 9 men received consecutive life sentences earlier this month. When the Polachi case emerged, the AIADMK was in power and the DMK was the opposition, with both sides at the time accusing the then ruling party of a cover-up and police inaction due to political links. Well, a new wave of COVID-19 infections is reportedly sweeping across Southeast Asia, with cities such as Hong Kong, Singapore and Bangkok reporting sharp rises in cases. Health authorities in China and Thailand have urged citizens to take booster vaccinations as precautionary measures. In Hong Kong, the Center for Health Protection has reported that COVID-19 activity is currently quite high. The number of positive respiratory samples has reached its highest level in over a year. In the week ending May 3rd, the city saw 31 severe COVID-related cases, the most in a 12-month period. Officials have also noted increased viral loads in sewage and spike in medical consultations and hospital admissions related to the virus. In Singapore, the Ministry of Health has confirmed a 28% rise in COVID-19 cases in the same week, with numbers climbing to 14,200. Hospital admissions rose by 30%. This marks the first time in nearly a year that the government has released detailed figures such as Singapore now only publishes updates during noticeable increases. The ministry over there said, and I'm quoting, "While the increase in cases could be due to factors including waning population immunity, there is no indication that the circulating variants are more transmissible or more severe than earlier strains." Thailand has also seen a rapid increase with 33,030 cases recorded in a week ending 17th of May, more than double than previous week. Bangkok had the highest number of cases, followed by Chonburi, Rayong and Nonthaburi. Most cases have been among adults aged 30 to 39. Health officials believe the spike followed mass gatherings during the Songkran festival in April. In China, authorities reported a nationwide increase in COVID-19 positivity rates between 31st March and May 4th. Among outpatient and emergency patients with flu-like symptoms, the positivity rate rose from 7.5% to 16.2%. Hospitalized cases also showed a jump from 3.3% to 6.3%, according to China's CDC. India has also seen a slight uptick, with the Ministry of Health reporting 257 active cases nationwide, from Kerala and Maharashtra seeing higher numbers. However, no outbreak has been recorded and monitoring continues. Officials across the region have pointed to the JN1 variant, a sublineage of Omicron, as the main driver of the current wave. The World Health Organization has labeled it a variant of interest, but has not classified it as a variant of concern at this point. That's all for today. You've been listening to the news with NDTV, your daily news people, and TV Bulletin wrapped in a compact podcast. If you want to catch up with the day's events in a hurry, do remember to subscribe to the news with NDTV on Apple, Spotify, and the NDTV News app. This is your host, Anviti, signing off.